towards
Hare
of the Lord,
Pathayam,
speeches of
Bhagavad Gita.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Your friend, the great sage Krishna Dvaipayan Das, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. Please repeat after me. Your friend, the great sage Krishna Dvaipayan Vyas, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. So the discussion is going on between Vidura and Maitreya Rishi. Vidura was traveling from one place of pilgrimage to another, and in this way traveling he came to Haridwar at the foothills of the Himalayan mountains where the Ganges flows, where actually the Ganges touches the flat land. So that's why Haridwar has been described in the previous verse as the where Ganga originates. Let me see which verse. Anyway, so can. Anyway, so yeah. So he met Maitreya Rishi in Haridwar, and there he approached Maitreya Rishi to instruct him about the ultimate goal of life, the real purpose of our existence. He requested him. So this is the quality of a sensi person. This is the quality of a sincere seeker of the absolute truth. When he comes across a spiritual personality, he inquires from him. Padi prashnena. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna described that quality as padi prashnena. Sincere inquiry. So that's why I encourage everybody to ask questions. Often after the long class, I ask, does anybody have any question? At the beginning there is no question, at the end there is no question. That means what? That means the mind is not really focused in the topic of Krishna Katha. The mind is not sincerely seeking the spiritual truth. The Prabhupada said there can be two reasons why one doesn't ask the question. One who understood everything, he doesn't have any question. Or one who didn't understand anything, doesn't have any question. But those who are in the middle of these two extremes, they'll have questions. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, during his encounters with Srila Prabhupada, he noticed one thing. That Prabhupada is hearing sincerely. Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur noticed that quality in Srila. So naturally, he had many questions also. And what is the ultimate question? What is the ultimate question? What is the first and the last question actually? That we find in Sanatana Goswami's encounter with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ki lagi amare kano jare kapotra? Why I am suffering from these threefold miseries of material nature? But generally people can't understand that. They don't realize that they are suffering. They think that everything is so wonderful. Life is so beautiful. Life is so full of enjoyment. But that is the illusion. That is what Maya is. We are suffering, but we are thinking that we are enjoying. That is what real meaning of Maya. Illusion. Illusion. Maya. And what is the illusion? The illusion is we are suffering, but we are thinking that we are enjoying. But those who are situated in proper understanding, they know the real condition of a material existence. Of course, when one realizes that he is suffering, then he must try to get out of his suffering. Trying to get out of the suffering condition and to become situated in a joyful state of existence is a natural, should be a natural tendency of an intelligent man. But to think that we are going to enjoy through the suffering condition is illusion. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami's first question to Mahaprabhu is, why am I suffering? Ki lagi? What for? Amare kano jare taputra? These threefold miseries are causing me to suffer. Why am I suffering due to the threefold miseries of the material nature? And I do not know how to get out of this suffering condition. So that should be our sincere inquiry. Instead of trying to make arrangements. Maya means trying to make adjustments in the material nature for enjoyment. But real knowledge is to understand the suffering condition and then try to get out of the suffering condition. Not stay in the suffering condition and try to make arrangement for enjoyment. So here, Vidura is requesting Maitreya Rishi that please tell me how can I get out of the suffering condition and become situated in an actual joyful situation. How can I solve all the problems of my life and become situated in the real state of joy? And he is making a very important point here. He is saying that your friend Vasudev has, Krishna Dvaipayan Vyas, has already presented the real solution in Mahabharata. But that hasn't been done directly, that has been done in an indirect way. In Mahabharata it has been done in an indirect way. And that's why he is saying, Hare Kathayam. But how? Gramma Sukhanu Badai Mati Grihita. Gramma Sukhanu Badai means, Gramya means mundane. Sukhanu Badai is endeavor for enjoyment. Gramma Sukh, mundane enjoyment. The mundane propensity, Mati propensity. The mundane propensity to be attracted to hearing about Gramma Katha. Gramma Katha, Gramma Sukha. So generally people want to hear about some interesting topic. What are the interesting topic? Interesting topic means stories, drama. Generally, common people are not interested in philosophy. They are interested in stories and movies. So Vyasadeva very expertly had done that. He presented Mahabharata to generate the interest of the people. Mahabharata is the greatest drama that has ever been written in this, in the history of this world. The greatest of all dramas. And this is factual. The facts are often more exciting than fiction. And Mahabharata is the proof. And what is drama? Does anybody know what is drama here? Did anybody do literature? Devahuti, you are studying literature. What is drama? Okay, very good point. A lot of emotions are added into it. But with what purpose? The purpose of drama is creating excitement through conflict. The more the conflict, better the drama. Right? Therefore, in a drama, we need two things. Three things, actually. We need protagonist and antagonist. A hero and villain. A good drama must have a hero and a villain. Right? And there must be a heroine. So hero and villain are the two essential characters, and then the heroine the sub thing that actually increases the drama. And often the conflict between the hero and the villain is over the heroine or over the kingdom, over something. So good drama must have conflict. Sanghash. If there is no conflict, there is no drama. So now in Mahabharata we see that. Now who are the heroes? The Pandavas are the heroes. Who are the villains? Duryodhan and his party are the villains. And who is the heroine? Draupadi. And so what the struggle is? Over the kingdom. Kingdom and heroine. Beautiful woman. So this is the and in Mahabharata, like that is why Mahabharata is so interesting for common people. It's very, very interesting for common people because of the conflict. But when they go deep into Mahabharata, what they will see? Yes, that will come ultimately. But what the immediate thing will be understanding from Mahabharata? The series of sufferings. In the material nature, they are trying to make all kinds of arrangements for enjoyment. But ultimately what you are getting? Look at the Mahabharata, the whole history of the holy land of India, the great Bharatvarsha. There is this conflict we are seeing. Like if we start from Bhishma, the grandsire, the grandfather. We are seeing that he's such an exalted personality, such a great hero. But look at his life. He is the son of Mother Ganges. He's a celestial personality. He's the son of a celestial personality. Ganges, the eternal consort of Krishna. Ganges is actually the eternal consort of Krishna. In Gokul, Ganges is a one of the four eternal concepts of Krishna. And the Ganges is the mother of Bhishma. And an illustrious king is the father, Shantanu. And who is Shantanu? He is also a demigod who has been cursed. Bashu, one of the eight Bashus, had been cursed to become. I'm sorry, that is Bhishma. Now, Shantanu is actually a personality who had been elevated to Brahma Loka in his previous life. He was elevated to Brahma Loka, and in spite of going to Brahma Loka, due to Brahma's curse, he had to come down to the earth planet. And Bhishma, the son of Ganga and Shantanu, and he is one of the, he's a demigod himself, he's a cursed demigod, one of the Pashus. And he is one of the greatest warriors. He had been trained in the heavenly planets. And who is his guru? His guru is Parashuram, in the incarnation of the Lord who came to annihilate Kshatriyas 21 times. One of the greatest warriors. So he personally taught Bhishma, Devabrata, with the art of warfare, art of using weapons. And he's such a noble character. When he found out that his father became interested on some girl whom he wanted to marry, so he went there to find out why the father of the girl did not offer his daughter to such a qualified person like his father, who was practically the ruler of the entire earth planet. And then he found out that this person wanted that his grandson, through his daughter, his daughter's son should become the king. But his father therefore could not fulfill that desire of that person, because Bhishma was already the crown prince. He was the elder son, and he was such a qualified person. So how can he be deprived of the kingdom? His father may have thought that way, but Bhishma's consideration was different. Bhishma went, and when he found out, he said, okay, I relinquish my claim over my kingdom, or over my father's kingdom, don't worry. I don't want the kingdom. Yes, your daughter's son will have the kingdom. Then this person was very cunning, king of the fishermen, Dhivaraj. He said, well, you may not claim, you may relinquish your claim over the kingdom, but what about your children? They will fight. Then Bhishma said, okay, then I won't have any children. I won't get married. Now such a sacrifice, just for the sake of his father's pleasure. But then, later on we find, what do we see? Later on we see that although this person, the king of the fishermen, he wanted that his daughter's children or son would become the king, both the sons of his daughter died prematurely. And there was no one to succeed the throne. Bhishma already promised that he relinquished. So this is a perfect example of the saying that man proposes, God disposes. We may make our plans, but ultimately everything will happen according to Krishna's arrangement. He so much wanted that his son, his grandson should become the king. His daughter's son should become the king. And for that matter, he made Bhishma to take such a terrible vow. But now there is no one to succeed the throne. The same Satyavati is asking, that Bhishma, you take over the kingdom, you take over the throne. Bhishma said, look, I took a promise, I made a promise that I will never have any claim over the kingdom. Once I made the promise, I'm not going to break my vow. Then he said, then you produce children. Look, I took a vow of lifelong brahmachari, so I can't break that promise also. So now the same personality for whom he had to make the vow, she is begging Bhishma, do something, get married or produce some children, take over the kingdom. Bhishma said no. And then one after another we see there is so much struggle. Then sons were born, and that also through such a great personality like Vasudeva. In the womb of Ambika and Ambalika, two queens of Vichitravirya, two sons are born, Dhritarashtra and Pandu. Dhritarashtra is blind from birth, and Pandu, he is pale, like he had some kind of disease, probably one can say something like albino. His body doesn't have the regular complexion, it's pale, like doesn't have the luster of the body, Pandu. But a great warrior, a very noble royal personality. But he also is cursed at a young age. That if you ever unite with your wife, you will die. And he didn't have any children. At a young age he got the curse, soon after getting married. Two extremely beautiful princesses as his wife, Kunti and Madhuri. But he can't have children. And another son is born out of Vasudeva, but that son is born out of a maidservant. Therefore he is considered to be a Shudra. And who is that personality? Vidura. And who is Vidura? Dharmaraj himself, Jamaraj himself. The personification of Dharma. Now in one hand we are seeing that the most exalted royal family, Chandravamsa, the family that came from Moon God, Chandradev, Somdev. There are two lines of Kshatriyas in this world. One is coming from Sun God, Suryadev, and that is Vivashvan. Imang Vivashvate Yogang Praptavan Aham Abhayam Vivashvan Manave Praho Mahu Ikshakule Abhrasit. Vivashvan's son, Suryadev's son, is Manu, Vaivashvata Manu. Manu's son is Ikshaku, and Ikshaku dynasty is the dynasty of Suryavamsa, where Lord Ramchandra appears. So this is one line, and the other is Chandravamsa, which came from Somdev. And this is the history of the Chandravamsa. That line ultimately comes to Shantanu, then Bhishma, then Vichitravirya, and from Vichitravirya the line came to Dhritarashtra and Pandu. But Pandu, both Dhritarashtra is blind, an extremely powerful personality. He actually had the strength of 10,000 elephants. Such a powerful person. But he is blind. And due to his blindness, he couldn't become the king. And he had a desire to hold on to the kingdom. That's why he is Dhritarashtra. The names, according to the Vedic understanding, The Vedic names are relative or significant to the characters of the personality. Dhritarashtra, Pandu. Like we can say Dhritarashtra. Dhrita means holding on to. And Rashtra means kingdom. He's blind. He doesn't have any right over the kingdom, nor does he have the quality to rule the kingdom. But he's holding on to the kingdom, although he's blind. And he couldn't become the king himself. But he harbored, he cherished a deep desire that his son would become the king. And when that was also foiled, that desire, then he was trying to make all kinds of arrangements to make his son the king. He did not hesitate to mistreat his brother's children in such a way, and the widow of his brother. He didn't even hesitate to plot to kill them. So this is the material nature. Society, friendship and love, everyone is running after that in the material nature. But what's the reality? For the sake of fulfilling your own agenda, one doesn't even hesitate to kill his own brother, brother's children, brother's widow. So Dhritarashtra is an example. He knew what Duryodhana was planning, to burn them alive in a house of Shala. So this is the reality. You think the material nature is such a wonderful place. People here are so selfish that although they have their noble characters and qualities, but when it comes to fulfilling their personal agenda, people do not hesitate to stoop down to the lowest degree. That's what the material nature is. So when we go beyond the drama of Mahabharata, then we begin to understand all these points. Generally when people read, like personally I can admit, I was reading Mahabharata, hearing about Mahabharata from my childhood, and I was fascinated by Mahabharata. But this understanding didn't come. We just saw it. I just saw or read Mahabharata just as one reads a book. Very exciting. Very exciting to read. But actual understanding began to dawn when I first realized that Mahabharata is not just a story, Mahabharata is a history. The narrations and descriptions of Mahabharata are not just some imaginary presentation. This is a recorded history of what happened in the past, in this very land. So this all happened due to Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Only Prabhupada, this is how Prabhupada actually opened our darkened eyes. Like we began to see things, we began to see the reality as it is. And in this way we began to see like the real, the underlying facts about Mahabharata. And there is so much struggle. And we see the characters. Duryodhana, in one hand, he has so many noble qualities. But all these noble qualities have been completely destroyed by his envy towards the Pandavas and his extreme ambition to hold on to the kingdom. So this is what the material nature is like. Even though an exalted personality, Duryodhana, he is quite an exalted personality. I mean, of course, when you read Mahabharata, we hate Duryodhana. But then again, underlying principle, an underlying observation reveals that why Duryodhana had so many friends and followers. Because there were some qualities in Duryodhana. He had some very wonderful qualities. He was a very genuine friend. He was a well-wisher of his friends. He was quite generous. I mean, all these qualities were there, but ultimately what he is? He is doing everything with a purpose. He joined hands with Karna. Why? Because he saw, here is the qualified, here is the competent rival of Arjuna. No one could, he himself couldn't compete with Arjuna. But here is a person who is probably greater than Arjuna, so let him make friends with him. And he immediately gave him a kingdom. He gave him one kingdom and made him a king. And all along, they have been great friends. And Karna also, another noble character, son of Suryadev, such a noble personality. But due to bad association, we see that he lost all his good qualities. In one hand, he is so broad and broad-minded and generous and noble, that when Indra came in the disguise of a Brahmana and asked him to give his kavacha and kundala that was born with him, armor that was a part of his body, he cut that and gave it off. And the thing was, the benediction was that as long as he had this kavacha and kundala in his body, no one will be able to kill him. So Indra knew, so Indra, in order to favor Arjuna, did that. Came in the disguise of a Brahmana and said that, please give me that. Therefore, Karna is known as Data Karna, the greatest of the datas, greatest of the donors. No one could compare Karna in his generous nature of donating whatever one wanted. He didn't hesitate to even sacrifice his own son. That's how generous he was. But then again we see the vile character of Karna. He is plotting with Duryodhana to kill the Pandavas. He is the one who he sided with Duryodhana when Draupadi was being naked. And he was telling the Pandavas, Draupadi, he was pleading to Draupadi on behalf of Duryodhana, that your husbands have lost everything, so why are you remaining loyal to him? Accept your new master. Karna, personality like Karna, speaking like that. I mean, it's very painful in a way. Then when also Abhimanyu was fighting alone, and the Maharathis getting together couldn't do anything, Karna from behind cut his bow. That is another unfair deal. In a battlefield, one should not shoot arrows from behind. And he cut his bow with his staff from the behind. So this is ultimately what this is doing. This is showing the reality of this material nature. This is what this nature where we are. And we talk of society, friendship and love. Forget it. Nothing like that. Everyone is for himself. The only one that we can ever depend on and rely on is Krishna. No one else. So that is the ultimate teaching of Mahabharata. And we can see Mahabharata is a series of miseries and sufferings. This way we can see the Kshatriyas, in one hand it seems there is so much glamour, there is so much luxury, so much enjoyment. But the underlying thing is, any day, any moment you can die. Today who is a queen, tomorrow she can become a widow. Today who is a king, tomorrow he can lose everything. Pandavas were in extreme, inconceivable luxury. When they established their kingdom in a barren place, actually, Dhritarashtra, we can see such treacherous character. When the Pandavas, first of all, they tried to kill them. And then when they found out that they were still alive, they said, okay, give them a part of the kingdom. although they actually inherited the whole kingdom, it is the understanding is that the eldest in the family would become the king. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was the king by his birthright. He was born as the eldest in the family. So he actually inherited the whole kingdom. But still, anyway, fine. Keep half for yourself and give half to them. But what half was given? A barren piece of land where there was nothing. Then it's forest or desert. But they created with their virtue, with their piety. This is another sign of a virtuous person, and a qualified, virtuous, noble person, is that wherever he goes, prosperity follows him. Although they went to a piece of land which was completely barren, barren piece of land, but prosperity followed them. That place became Indraprastha. And that their kingdom was so opulent that Duryodhana, again, just by seeing that, he started to burn with envy. He couldn't sleep at night due to his envy. How to take it away from them? Why they are having such opulence? So this is the nature of envy. An envious person always burns, burns internally, seeing the prosperity of others. He can't tolerate that others are flourishing, others are prospering. Whereas a noble man, he rejoices seeing others' prosperity. And that is the difference between an envious person and a virtuous person. And then you know what happened. Even to think of it is so painful. They were invited to a game of dice. Dhritarashtra was a part of it. He was a party to it. He knew everything that was being arranged. He invited them. That's why Yudhishthira Maharaj couldn't refuse. Oh, my uncle has come to the house, and my uncle wants to have a game of dice with his sons. So how can I refuse? And he started to lose everything. He lost everything in that. So today they are the richest person, performed the Rajasuya Yajna, became the king of the entire earth planet. The day after that, they lost everything. So this is the reality of the material nature. Today you may be the king, tomorrow you may be a pauper. And then we see, ultimately, after so much struggle, still everything is led to the battle. They tried to stop this battle in so many ways, but couldn't. And they couldn't because it was Krishna's plan. Krishna came to actually annihilate the demons. And battle of Kurukshetra was actually the plan of Krishna to wipe out all the demons in one stroke. Since Krishna appeared, he started to kill one after another demon. Putana, Srinavarta, Sakatasura, Adhasura, Bakasura. These demons he was killing single-handedly. Then he killed Kamsa, then he arranged to kill Jarasandha. But final arrangement was get them all together and in one go just wipe them out. In 18 days the earth was completely bereft of all the Kshatriyas. 18 days of battle, the earth is practically devoid of any warrior. So many widows, so many people, so many queens and princesses and such celestial beauties, overnight they all are widows. And it's so pathetic, the whole episode of Mahabharata is actually so pathetic. But in that there is this crest jewel that is Bhagavad Gita. The idea was that through Mahabharata one will relate to Bhagavad Gita and would be able to understand. Those days people listened and understood properly, and the teachers also taught properly. But nowadays, like we can see, like first of all, the real understanding of Mahabharata is not there. Mahabharata is just presented in some, in a very comical way. And Bhagavad Gita, all kinds of unscrupulous people are giving their version of Bhagavad Gita, their own philosophy, if at all you can call that philosophy. Not philosophy, it's their nonsense, gibberish. So that is what is going on today. Prabhupada is the only personality who just came and gave the real Bhagavad Gita. And we are fortunate that we got that. Had we not have come across, had Prabhupada not have come, I don't know what would have happened to this world. Actually, the world has been saved by Srila Prabhupada. People don't recognize that. Even we don't understand that. In spite of being followers of Srila Prabhupada, we don't understand that properly. But in course of time, it will be seen. The real understanding of the Vedic wisdom has been revealed and presented by Srila Prabhupada. Where else do we get the proper understanding of Bhagavad Gita? Of course, there are like Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Bhagavad Gita is there. There's Vishwanath Chakravarti, Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentary is there. But the thing is, how many people have access to that? Those books are not really being promoted. They are not even properly translated. Srila Prabhupada actually gave the Bhagavad Gita in English and then translated into all different languages of the world. So that today at least the real understanding of Bhagavad Gita is available to the people all over the world. And it will continue to grow. When I started to read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, it just occurred to me, wow, this is it. Of course, by that time I understood where the mistake was in my search for spiritual life. And that's the time I began to realize how I was misled by all kinds of nonsense philosophy, Mayavad, the most dangerous thing in this world. Seems to be a spiritual thing. These are two things, Mayavad and Shunyavad. Impersonalism and voidism. It seems spiritual, yeah. Apparently it's spiritual, but it's dangerous. A misleading spiritual understanding. Apparently spiritual, but it's the most subtle form of atheism. Most dangerous form of atheism. Mayavad is actually atheism. Shunyavad is atheism. There's nothing spiritual about it. At the most we can say it is spiritual suicide. Spiritual suicide. Therefore, Prabhupada came. What is Prabhupada's gift? Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatta Deshatadi. Nirvisheshvad and Shunyavad has been removed from the Western world. Western world, because Prabhupada was apparently preaching to the Western world, but I will say from this world altogether. Prabhupada's teaching is not only for the Western world, Prabhupada's teaching is for the whole world. Although Prabhupada started to preach in the West, but the benefit will be harvested all over the world. So this is how Srila Prabhupada actually has benefited the world and saved the world. At least we are saved, and in course of time more and more people will be saved. The popularity of this process will grow as intelligent class of people will become exposed to Prabhupada's teachings. They will recognize and accept it. They will understand and accept it. It's happening all over the world today. And it will keep on increasing up. Actually, after Prabhupada's disappearance, there have been some setback. There have been some difficulties. But in course of time, these difficulties will be overcome and Krishna consciousness movement will be spreading like leaps and bounds, like a wildfire. Like a wildfire that will destroy all the impurities of the world and let the world shine forth in its real benefit. So Prabhupada is pointing out that Mahabharata, the importance of Mahabharata, and the real importance of Mahabharata is Krishna Katha. What is Krishna Katha? What Krishna said. Actually in Mahabharata, that's another thing. In Mahabharata, Krishna is not the hero. In Mahabharata, Arjuna is the hero. Krishna is a side character. Therefore, Mahabharata again becomes a little confusing. Also, the purpose of Mahabharata, what has been presented as the goal of life is also very misleading. Mahabharata is not promoting the idea of going back to Godhead. Mahabharata is promoting the idea of going to the heavenly planets. So all the purpose, whatever one is doing, is to go to heavenly planet. That is the general understanding. Whatever they are doing is to go to the heavenly planet. That's the idea. And Krishna is in the background, more or less. Krishna, at least, is not in the background, he's on the sideline. But his glory is becoming manifest from time to time. Mahabharata is describing how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the emphasis is not there. Krishna shows, there is a description of Krishna showing his universal form. Bhishma worshipping Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vidura broadcasting Krishna's glory as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it's not really coming as strongly as it should be, as the absolute truth. It's not coming that way. Although Krishna is seen, shown as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but one is not seeing that. Therefore, there is a need of Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore, there is a need to understand teachings of Krishna in the form of Bhagavad Gita from Mahabharata. That is the preliminary study. Mahabharata is taking us to an excursion, and then through that excursion is giving us the information about the upper diamond mind. And now let us dig into the diamond mind. And the diamond mind is Bhagavad Gita. And once we approach the diamond mind, then the whole world of jewels begin to open up in front of us. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari. Does anybody have any question? Did I read the purport?
No.
Oh. Okay, let's read the purport. It'll be a little longer class. I just got carried away with that introduction of the translation. The great sage, purport by Srila Prabhupada, the great sage Krishna Dvaitvayan Das is the author of all Vedic literature, of which his work, Vedanta Sutra, Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahabharata, are very popular readings. As stated in Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva compiled the Mahabharata for the less intelligent class of men. You know, I realize what happened. While you were chanting the shloka, I was reading the purport. And that's what kind of gave me the impression that I already read it. The Vedanta Sutra was compiled for persons already above the mundane topics, who might already have tested the literature, tested the bitterness of the so-called happiness of mundane affairs. The first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra is Athato Brahma Jikyasa, that is, only when one has finished the business of mundane inquiries in the marketplace of sense gratification can one make relevant inquiries regarding Brahman, the transcendence. Those persons who are busy with the mundane inquiries which fill the newspapers and other such literatures are classified as Stri Shudra Dijabandhus, or women, the laborer class, and unworthy sons of the higher classes, Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishyas. Such less intelligent men cannot understand the purpose of Vedanta Sutra, although they may make a show of studying the sutras in a perverted way. The real purpose of Vedanta Sutra is explained by the author himself in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and anyone trying to understand the Vedanta Sutra without reference to Srimad Bhagavatam is certainly misguided. Such misguided persons who are interested in the mundane affairs of philanthropic and altruistic work under the misconception of the body as the self could better take advantage of the Mahabharata, which was specifically compiled by Srila Vyasadeva for their benefit. The great author has compiled the Mahabharata in such a way that the less intelligent class of men who are more interested in the mundane topics may read the Mahabharata with great relish, and in the course of such mundane happiness can also take advantage of Bhagavad Gita, the preliminary study of Srimad Bhagavatam or the Vedanta Sutra. Srila Vyasadeva had no interest in writing a history of mundane activities other than to give less intelligent persons the chance for transcendental realization through Bhagavad Gita. Vidur's reference to the Mahabharata indicates that he had heard the Mahabharata from Vyasadeva, his real father, while he was away from home and was touring the place of pilgrimage. So here Prabhupada is pointing out why Vyasadeva gave Mahabharata for the less intelligent class of people, because their interest is of certain nature, and through that lead them into Bhagavad Gita, which is the preliminary study of Srimad Bhagavatam and Vedanta Sutra. And Prabhupada is pointing out, otherwise Vyasadeva didn't have any business to write some mundane history. So that is the real purpose, and that real purpose has been revealed by Srila Prabhupada, and therefore we are eternally indebted to Srila Prabhupada. The more we recognize what Srila Prabhupada gave, the more we will benefit spiritually. It's not that I'm just trying to promote Srila Prabhupada because he is my spiritual master. Not only that, of course, that is my duty. As his disciple, it is my duty to broadcast the glory of my spiritual master. But the main purpose of that is to make everybody understand the benefit that he will derive by accepting Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Thank you very much. All glory is to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Yeah.
How demigods have a good fortune to directly associate Krishna?
Yeah.
They are the least devotees, they are not pure devotees.
Yeah. You see, they are mixed devotees, but when they perform devotion, then Krishna, as the supreme well-wisher of everyone, makes arrangements to take them to a higher stage.
By the mercy of Krishna, not by their good fortune.
Good fortune cannot take us to Krishna. Yeah. It's the mercy of Krishna and mercy of devotees, namely the mercy of devotees.
Like, after when Krishna departs back from this lineage, and you stay back, you go back again to the
They that can have two different ways. One is they may go back to the heavenly planets, and after completing their tenure, then they go back to the spiritual sky. Or they can also go back to the spiritual sky. And the third consideration is, one part of them goes to the spiritual sky and another part stays in the heavenly planet. So these are the three possibilities. Arjuna is, here we have to understand that Arjuna is Krishna's eternal associate. So is Draupadi. But also, some fortunate in the sense spiritually elevated personality may get the good fortune of merging in the body of Arjuna and get the benefit. Arjuna is Krishna's eternal associate. Arjuna comes. Another personality may merge into Arjuna's role. And derive the benefit
from the
demigods, or from, not from the Arjuna's situation will not be that
of the person is merging, maybe demigods.
Like say for example, Indra, Arjuna is coming, and Indra's part coming as Arjuna, and a clearer understanding will come from here. In one hand, we see that the Shrutis are getting the good fortune of becoming the gopis. But the gopis are Krishna's eternal associates. Wherever Krishna is going, the gopis are also coming. So here we have to understand that the Shrutis have the good fortune of merging in the personality of those gopis. So gopis were there, these personalities also were there. And how it happened, by Krishna's mercy, everything is possible. One soul can become divided into many, and many souls can become one by Krishna's mercy. Let's start with one.
You said that the couple of backup set of element demoniac.
Can you open this door? Get a little stuffy. Open that door also. So there'll be some cross ventilation. Yeah.
So the purpose of the battle of Kurukshetra is to eliminate the demoniac king. But why then did the saintly kings on the side of Pandavas like Dukra and
Good point, yeah. That has been explained by Krishna himself to Yudhishthira Maharaj. When Yudhishthira Maharaj after battle was lamenting, Yudhishthira Maharaj was completely devastated. Because he was thinking that it's all because of him that such destruction took place. And Krishna explained that, look, this was my purpose. I made this arrangement because my business is to annihilate the demons. And those who came to assist me, because the mission was accomplished, I sent them back to their respective places. So, you see, those who are on the Pandava side and Krishna's side, obviously they are not demons. Then why they had to die in the battle of Kurukshetra? Because now the mission has been accomplished, go back to your respective places. And similarly, Krishna caused the Jadus to fight with each other and apparently kill themselves. Right? Because Krishna was about to withdraw his pastimes, and he felt, before I go home, let them send back home first. That's why he made that arrangement. Okay, you have a chance for another question.
Ganga is actually the consort of Lord Shiva.
Ganga, not really. She is the consort of Krishna.
So how could she be the wife of Santanu?
Well, by Krishna's arrangement, everything is possible. How could Draupadi be the consort of the Pandavas? So Krishna allows some individual to, you know, sort of have some relationship with somebody in this material nature when they come. It's Krishna's arrangement. And we have to understand that their relationship is not at all mundane. The Pandavas' relationship with Draupadi is not mundane. Santanu's relationship with Ganga is not mundane. It's beyond us. Therefore, it's better to let it fly above our head. We will never be able to reason it. Yes, Nita Chandra?
When you explain that how materialists are trying to make plans for enjoyment in this world, but at the same time, we also try to make plans for the service of the Lord. So again, is it not like a controller mentality that...
Because you are arranging for the service of the Lord, because the Lord is in the center, it's not material anymore, it's spiritualized. Right? Material, you see, that's the difference between material and spiritual. You do it for yourself, it's material. You do it for yourself, it's material. You do it for Krishna, it's spiritual. No matter what. Arjuna is fighting the battle, Karna is fighting the battle. Karna is doing it for himself. Therefore, for him it's material. The same battle of Kurukshetra. Arjuna is fighting for Krishna. Therefore, it's spiritual. Mm. Yeah.
Andy, it is called Janma Tashriyato. A very original from Krishna. So, we are in Andy. So, where it comes from Krishna?
It comes from Krishna in an indirect way. The love for Krishna and appreciation of Krishna, when it is in a perverted form, that is envy. Yes, Devarti, and then Baru.
So I have two questions. The first one is that impersonation is regarded as a dangerous thing. And the base of impersonation was created by Shankaracharya of the Shivananda. So, Shankaracharya being a strong personality, he would have actually preached about Krishna consciousness and the personal service. Why did he go for impersonation? He said that he actually created a basis for...
He actually preached Krishna consciousness. Therefore, I have a plan to make a movie on Shankaracharya. It's all ready, it's only the time and to film it. And you'll see, Shankaracharya was a great devotee. It is only his teaching has been misrepresented in such a way. That's the first point. The second point is, Shankaracharya came with a purpose. You see, Krishna came as Buddha. Why did he come as Buddha? To stop the animal killing, right? Now, how did you stop the animal killing? By rejecting the Vedas and bringing out a new doctrine called Buddhism. So, he did that to stop the animal sacrifice, because the animal sacrifice was going on in the name of the Vedas. So, if you reject the Vedas, then there is no room for animal sacrifice, right? But without the Vedas, people will not have any understanding of the spiritual reality. So Vedas have to be reinstated. Right? Therefore, Krishna instructed Shankar, Lord Shiva, to come and do this job, to re-establish the Vedas. And in order to re-establish the Vedas over the atheism of Buddhism, he had to present it according to the way they would accept. Right? If he gave the pure doctrines of the Vedas, they will say, that is your theory. Right? We have nothing to do with that. Right? Therefore, Shankaracharya had to present it according to their doctrine. And in simple words, it is like they say, Buddhists say that Nirvana means to merge with the void. Shankaracharya raised the point that you are using that expression Nirvana, and this is the Vedic concept. And the Vedic concept is not to merge with the void, to merge with everything, merge with Brahman. Right? And what is Brahman? He gave Brahman is everything. You see, they are the followers of voidism. Now, if you tell them about the variegatedness of the spiritual reality, then they will not be able to accept it. They will not accept it. Therefore, his thing was, the spiritual reality is not void, but spiritual reality is devoid of shape. You get it? Huh? It's not void, but it's devoid of shape and quality and form. Right? And by saying that, he established re-established the Vedas. So then, once the Vedas were re-established, then Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya and Vaishnavacharyas came and they presented the real teachings of the Vedas. So Shankaracharya had to do that job for the sake of establishing the Vedas, re-establishing the Vedas. Therefore, it's in Vishnu Purana, Shankaracharya, Lord Shiva is saying that Mayavadam Asat Shastram Prachanna Bodham Uchyate Mayaiva Vihitam Devi Kalo Brahmana Murtina. Devi, he is talking to Parvati, that Parvati, I will appear in the age of Kali as a Brahmana, Brahmana Murtina. And I will establish a theory called Mayavad, which is Asat Shastram. Asat Shastra means a temporary scripture, temporary doctrine, which is Prachanna Bodham Uchyate. Prachanna means covered, and Bodham means Buddhism, which is actually covered Buddhism. So I'll do it in order to re-establish the Vedas.
My second question is, in one of my Hindi texts I read, there is a story that said that Yudhishthira is the only one who reaches to heaven. So, maybe
you see, again, Mahabharata has been written for whom? Less intelligent class of people. And Mahabharata, the presentation, as Prabhupada pointed out, that Mahabharata is actually not leading to the spiritual sky. Mahabharata is actually, goal that has been presented in Mahabharata is heavenly planets, apparently. The general goal is heavenly planets, but when you reach the Bhagavad Gita, then everything becomes clear. It's like, say, something like a sugar-coated medicine. The medicine is there, but you know, you tell the child, look, there is such a nice candy, right? And the child, being attracted to the candy, takes it, but eventually he takes the medicine. So Mahabharata is something like that. Sugar-coated Vedanta philosophy, right? No, okay, so I was coming to that, you know. You see, a devotee, whether he goes to hell or heaven, that is always spiritual for him. A king's man goes to the prison. Does he become a prisoner? Right? So if you consider that the hell is the prison, then if Krishna's devotee goes to hell, does he go to hell? He goes there to just accomplish some purpose. Right? He is always free. So, another thing is that, you know, that's why it's, Mahabharata is not really, you don't get the real understanding from Mahabharata. An example is, what they are saying, that Yudhishthira Maharaj, although he went to heaven, but he had to go to hell. Right? Why? He had to go to heaven? Yeah, what was the line? Ashwatthama iti gaje. Was it a lie? So, the real understanding is that if at all Yudhishthira Maharaj went to hell, it was not because of telling a lie, because he didn't tell a lie. But his mistake was Krishna told him to do something and he didn't do that. That was his fault. Anyway, ultimately, you see, they are all pure devotees of Krishna. So, when you see things in the light of Krishna consciousness, then you get another picture. Right? So that picture is the real picture. The picture that has been drawn by Mahabharata is not the real picture. This is the fourth question. Okay, go ahead. Well, there, you see, that is according to the body's nature. But when you come to the soul, it's a different consideration altogether. Like in one hand, the scriptures are saying that the women are less intelligent and women birth is not very exalted and so forth. But then again we are seeing who are the greatest devotees of Krishna? Well, all the women are the greatest devotees of Krishna, right? So, do you see the difference? Like, materially there may be certain consideration, but the spiritual consideration is completely different. When you come to a spiritual consideration, that one is praying, that let me become a woman, right? For example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying that when I achieve my spiritual perfection, and I'll become a maid servant of Srimati Radharani. So he's praying to become a woman, maid servant. Right? So that's why we'll have a misleading, or we'll be prone to develop some misconception when we see things, even the scriptural conclusions, from a mundane perspective. We have to take it from the spiritual perspective. Then only we'll get the clear picture. Alright? So you're very fortunate that you have taken birth in a woman's body. Yes, Paru? You can ask me as many questions you want, because at the beginning of the class I actually encouraged you to ask questions. And when I said that to Krishnarchana, I was just joking. Krishnarchana has all the time to ask me all the questions he has in his mind.
My first question is that Shantanu and Satyavati are having children.
Yeah. You see, the Vedic understanding is that if the husband dies without having any offspring, then the wife can have a child from the brother-in-law, the husband's brother. That is called Devarena Sututpatti. In other ages, that was the custom. But in that custom has been forbidden in this age of Kali. The five things have been forbidden in the age of Kali. Sannas, Ashwamedham, Ashwamedhyagya, Gavalabdham, Gomedhyagya, Ashwamedham, Gavalabdham, Sannyas, Palapautrikam, offering meat to the Shraddha of the forefathers, and Devarena Sutatpatti, Kalo Pancha Vivarjayet. These five have been, Vivarjayet, have been rejected, or hasn't been accepted in the age of Kali. They cannot be performed. Now you may ask question about Sannyas. That sannyas is egg dandasannas, which is when one tries to achieve liberation through sannyas, that sannyas has been forbidden. But to accept sannyas in order to become, in order to offer one's body, mind and soul to Krishna, that sannyas is accepted, that sannyas is alright. So in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur instituted that kind of sannyas, Tridanda sannyas, not Ekadanda sannyas. Okay? Second question? Yeah. Vichitravijaya was the son of Santanu and Satavati. Santanu and Satavati had two sons, Chitrangad and Vichitravijaya. See, Santanu and Satavati, Satavati became the queen, Santanu's wife, and he had two sons through her. One is Chitrangad and Vichitravijaya. Vichitravijaya was married to two princesses of the Kashi Raj, the king of Kashi, and they are Ambika and Ambalika. There were three sisters. Amba wanted to marry, yeah, and Shalva, but Bhishma, when she told that she gave her heart to Shalva, Shalya, then he said, okay, fine, you go back to him. But when she went back to Shalva, he refused to accept her. He said that a lion doesn't take the remnants of other animals. You have been taken by Bhishma, and now he is doing charity to me by sending you back, you go back to him. So she went and appealed to Bhishma to marry her. Then Bhishma refused to marry. He said, I can't. And she insisted that, look, Shalva is not accepting, nobody else will accept me, so you accept me, and that is your dharma. And then when Bhishma was undaunted, then she approached Parashuram. And Parashuram said, okay, I will tell you to marry you. So he came and appealed to Bhishma. Bhishma, marry this poor girl. Bhishma said, I have taken a vow, how can I marry you? So Parashuram said that, I am telling, I am your guru, I am telling you to marry. Get married. Still Bhishma would not listen to him. So finally they got into a fight. Fighting with Parashuram was not an easy job. Right? And eventually, they both of them ceased fighting. And Parashuram told Amba, look, I'm sorry, I can't do anything. Then she entered into fire to give up her body with an intense desire to kill Bhishma. And as a result of that, she became Shikhandi in the next life. I mean, she appeared as Shikhandi as the son of Drupad, King Drupad, Draupadi's brother. And Shikhandi eventually became the cause of Bhishma's death. Krishna knew that, and Krishna also knew that Bhishma knew that Shikhandi in his previous life was a woman. Shikhandi is actually a woman. So Bhishma will not release arrows from his bows towards Shikhandi when she is there, because he will be cautious about hurting a woman. So Krishna advised that Arjun take Shikhandi as his charioteer. And because Shikhandi was there, Bhishma will not shoot any arrows, and then Arjun could just shoot hundreds of arrows, thousands of arrows on Bhishma's body. And Bhishma did that. He took the arrows of Arjun from Arjun's head without any protest, without any defense. And as a result of that, Bhishma finally fell. All these arrows pierced his body and went out from the other side. So when Bhishma fell, he fell on the bed of arrows.
Hmm.
No, this is the third question. Anyway.
So my third question is to know that when we, this Mahabharata and Krishna's pastime is, it's like a play, because all the demons, many demons, they got demolished in Krishna's body, like Putna got placed on Krishna's car. But when we leave this pastime, we really hate this villains and demons. So what should be proper understanding? Should we hate them? Because when we...
The proper understanding should be that even if we become a demon in Krishna's pastime, even if we become a demon, even if we develop a demoniac relationship, an inimical relationship with Krishna, still this is the benefit. Right? So what kind of benefit we'll derive if we become a devotee of Krishna? Right? So a Krishna conscious person will take it in this way. So no, let me become a demon. Right? See, the disadvantage of becoming a demon is that we may be killed by Krishna, or we may not be killed by Krishna, and if we are not killed by Krishna, then we will be in trouble. Right? Yes, if we are killed by Krishna, yes, we will have an inconceivable benefit, but if we are not, then what? Whereas, if we become a devotee of Krishna, then whoever we are killed by will derive the ultimate benefit. Right? Okay, go ahead.
Good morning. I have some questions from seminar you gave in August.
Okay.
Good morning. One question was that you are saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he is in need of Radharani, it's like he opened the treasury for everyone and he's distributing Krishna to him. But in natural condition, Krishna, Krishna hides Bhakti, he doesn't take Bhakti. And Balram is coming like Krishna. So what makes Balram turn into Nityananda Prabhu and distributing this Krishna thing, even in greater sentences?
Yeah, because when Balaram sees that this is the mood Krishna has assumed, and he says, okay, let me help him all the way. Right? If this is what Krishna wants, then let me help him all the way. Right? Therefore, Balaram's mercy is even greater than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. Nityananda Prabhu's mercy is greater. Because he is assisting him. Right? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is merciful, but Nityananda Prabhu is even more merciful because he is his assistant. So he is assisting him in this pastime. Okay, yes, okay, Lai.
Guruji, you said the cause of our fall down lies in the spiritual realm. So does the servant spiritual, the pure devotees who actually understand this, who get this spiritual position, can they know their cause?
Yeah, yeah. Just as Prabhupada mentioned, or this is the scripture also, it has clarified that point, that when you develop Krishna prema, then what actually happens is Krishna appears. Right? And in the light of Krishna, you see everything. Just like when the sun comes up, then you don't have to imagine about your form. You can just stand in front of a mirror and can see yourself. Right? So similarly, when we become pure, and in that pure consciousness means Krishna consciousness, not self-consciousness. Now impure consciousness is self-consciousness, or selfish consciousness, right? Self-centered consciousness. That is the impure state of consciousness. And the pure consciousness is Krishna consciousness, Krishna-centered consciousness. So in that Krishna-centered consciousness, you see everything, you see everybody. So in Krishna-centered consciousness, you see yourself in relation to Krishna. And that yourself, that identity of yours, is your Swarup. Okay. Yeah.
This question has been in my mind since a long time.
I'll just make another point to Parul's question here. Self-centered consciousness means body consciousness. Right? And we see everything through the body. Right? Whatever the body is going through, whatever relationship we have gone through the body, we are seeing everything in the light of the body, through our senses. So that is the material consciousness. Impure consciousness. But to see everything with Krishna in the center, that is Krishna consciousness. Yes.
You mentioned then like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he, unlike Krishna, hasn't made any conditions to give Krishna. Krishna just surrendered, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He also said that when you worship Lord Chaitanya, offenses are not counted. Whereas in the show, Krishna, offenses are counted. So my question is, although we are worshipping Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, still we have to surrender, because without surrender there is no progress. And still we have to guard our religious offenses, because if we commit offenses, we are not getting the case. So what is then to be understood when it is said that offenses are not counted in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it is, cannot be given without even the condition that one has to surrender. So we still have to surrender in the word.
Surrender you have to under any condition, whether it is to Krishna or to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or to Nityananda Prabhu or to Radharani. Surrender or to spiritual master or to Vaishnava. Surrender is a must. Without surrender, spiritual life is not possible. And as far as offenses are concerned, you see, there is no offense on the spiritual plane. In the spirit, real spiritual platform, there is no offense. There may be fights, but there is no offense. But at the same time, you know, we should be careful not to commit any offense. Guard ourselves against offense. So it is, you know, on our part, we become very concerned about not committing offenses always. And at the same time, we just become absorbed in our devotional service. And when it comes to devotional service, then offense, no offense, that becomes irrelevant. That time we are absorbed in service, no time to even think about offenses. And the mood of a devotee is, for the sake of my service, if I have to commit offense, what to do? For the sake of my service, if I have to go to hell, I'll go to hell. But the point is, when you have become absorbed in such mood of devotion, such mood of service, then there is no room for offense. Like we notice sometimes that while rendering service, we can't really worry so much about offenses. And the mood is that for the sake of rendering service, if I have to commit some offense or not, I don't care. My service is what really matters. Especially, I notice that when it comes to guarding, protecting that institution that Srila Prabhupada gave us, sometimes we are apparently exposed to offenses. We have to say things about certain things that are happening, that is hurting the movement. We have to speak up. And if we say, oh, I don't want to commit offense, then what will happen? You know, they'll just, you know, completely destroy the society. Like if somebody comes and you see somebody has come to steal, and if you think, oh, if I shout, then maybe I'll commit offense, better I keep quiet. Then the thief will steal everything. He'll steal it up. So there is Shalu. Wake everybody up. It is not a three thing. It is not a three thing. And sometimes I also consider, for example, that a dog is there. The dog sleeping is still God. The dog barks. Even when friend of the master comes, the dog barks. But does the same friend take offense? No, because he knows that there's a business of the dog and the master comes and back to me. If we become too concerned about offenses and neglect our responsibilities, that is also rather do your duty. As far as service comes, you know, the mood should be for the sake of my rendering my service, if I have to go to hell, I'm prepared to go. Like the example of the gopi. When Narad Muni is picking the dust from their feet to offer to Krishna. They are ready to do it. And when you ask me to do it, you know what will happen, you have to go to hell. If you go to hell, so what is this Krishna is doing? We are prepared to go to hell, like Krishna is doing. Ocean, the ocean of moon. Yeah. Seven continents of this Bhumanda. The general understanding that he gave him, this is the Jambudvi, surrounded by salt and ocean. Then Jambu makes this Lakshadvi, surrounded by sugar water. In this way, Lavan, Shura, Shadvi, you know, this way it goes. There are seven islands and seven oceans. And there is a milk ocean. And the milk ocean has the islands. How are they placed in the 14th place? This is the boom one. The middle one. This is the middle one. Bhumandal has Shaktadvip and Shaktasagar. Then above that is Bhugalloka. So this is one thing. There are seven planetaries. Yes. Because you see, by karmic, by taking care of, you know, this consideration of 5 feet or not committing sin, you cannot take care of karmic consideration. Because you are doing, you know, performing one act to nullify the other act, you know. Hundreds of other reactions will generate. Therefore, you know, the cosmos to prashchittas. They may say that, okay, we'll cover a mouth so that nobody can get harmed. Oh, what if somebody gets into the ether and gets killed? What about all these, you know, all these microbes in the stomach? In the process of our digestion, millions of microbes are being destroyed. What about them? How will you stop that? Right? What about your breathing? Do you think nothing is entering through your breathing and say, you know, another few million microbes are not being destroyed with every single breath? So how are you going to deal with all those karma? Therefore, the safest way is Sarva Dharma Purusha. Just surrender to Krishna. He will wipe out karma. Yes. Both are true. Yudhishthira Maharaj came as the son of Karma, and Vidura came due to the curse. The Samurai had to take care of him. Financial assistant means they are being sponsored. Duryodhana was the king and they were being maintained by Duryodhana. They're living in the palace, all the expenses owned by Duryodhana. That shows the effect of food. How karma flows through foodstuff. In this restaurant, this example is terrifying. When Bhishma, lying in the bed of arrows, was instructing Yudhishthira Maharaj about the principles of karma, then he noticed that there was a smile in Draupadi's face. So he asked Draupadi, and Draupadi told him, where was your wisdom when I was being disrobed in that time? Where was your wisdom? At that time he did not speak of God. At that time he did speak about God. Then Bhishma admitted that at that time my consciousness became contaminated because I was eating the food of God. But now that bad blood has drained out of my body. And that's the now the consciousness. Actually, she has a question also. Who is that fortunate one? who did that? Is he a devotee? Or? Yes, yes. So who is the Mataji? So the Mataji is a devotee Mataji? No, who said that? Who is that? Now, ke janu, ke in Tirupati temple, why make comments like that? In Tirupati, you say, see?
I don't have that strategy that.
Anyway, I get your point. Like, you know, devotees should be humble. You know? They shouldn't be. This kind of mentality should be given. Don't think that because you have become a devotee, you have become above. Become more humble than a blade of grass and more tolerant. And if you have to control the crowd, then do it in a proper way. Think of how to control the crowd. Guide them in a proper way, as they do in Tirupati. You have to stand in a queue. Maybe even that queue is one or 2 miles long. You have to stand in a queue, and there is no room for hustling and bustling. Anyway, I mean, I don't want to. I didn't find out who did that, but my general request and instruction to all of you: when people come to the temple, treat them like your honored guest. They are coming to Krishna's temple. They are not coming to your father's house. Treat them like that. They are coming to Krishna's temple, and you are Krishna's servant. They are Krishna's guests. And if you have to crowd control, then make arrangements properly. And don't unnecessarily get into arguments like that, or they are doing service. In the name of service, if some nonsense is going on, that shouldn't be tolerated as service. Gamana, make sure that, you know, that devotees don't develop this kind of misconception. I made one point very, very clear that I am not going to tolerate any kind of nonsense in this temple. I would rather get rid of the nonsense and maintain the purity of this temple. You have seen how I am getting rid of the nonsenses. Whoever is a nonsense, whoever is going to become a weed in the garden, I'll get rid of him. And you also, everybody, maintain that standard. It's your duty also to see that no one is injecting or introducing any kind of misconception in this temple. Okay. Oh, yeah. So, what, 11 o'clock? Will that be a good time? Let's have an Ishtavashti today at 11. And also one announcement I wanted to make, that to this evening and tomorrow evening also I want to have Prabhupada Katha, Prabhupada's Vyas Puja. And I want everybody to write something. Whoever can write, whether it's in Bengali or in Hindi or in Tamil or in Telugu, in whichever language you feel comfortable with, you write your offering to Srila Prabhupada and make that offering to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada at least understands every language.
Five thirty class.
Yes. Yes, sure, why not? And 5:30 we'll have Krishna book, Krishna Katha. We are doing Chaitanya Charitamrita before, but now we'll do Krishna book for Janmashtami. Sure.
Devotee?
Demons.
But what about the demons killed by Maya and
Devi,
you know,
what
do they do
not
again?
No. Only Krishna did, Asura Harina Hata. When the Hari, when the Asuras are killed by Hari, then only they get Sajujya Bhakti. Maya cannot, at the most they can get heavenly planets or higher planets, but not. Yes. Shiva can give benediction that he will become a devotee of Krishna. But in order to enter into the spiritual sky, one has to become a devotee of Krishna. As a matter of fact, Lord, if one is not a devotee of Krishna, Lord Shiva will stop him from entering.